So this is Abigail Sidebottom interviewing Peter
Bounds.
Peter Bounds. At the Reading Room on the 2nd of November, I believe it is today, as part of the Sea Empress project. So Peter, I think we'll start by just asking you to give some biographical background about what you were doing at the time of the Sea Empress oil spill 20 years ago.
Right. Well, I was sort of proprietor and director of the water sports centre in Dale, which was only about a mile and a half from where the Sea Empress actually ran aground in the first place. The centre I got was generally recognised to be one of the top water sports centres in the UK. We used to run a lot of very high-level training courses, as well as teaching beginners. We trained a lot of instructors, and we trained a lot of trainers to train the instructors. This is operating under the Royal Yachting Association training schemes. And total staff at the centre were about 35 people we had. It was a water sports centre, a five-bedroom guest house. Had a shop, retail outlet attached to the water sports centre. We had a cafe. Cafe, bar, restaurant. We ran live music there 3 nights a week and had a season of about 9 months where we were fairly active throughout the year. And we got about over 1,000 people coming each season to do residential courses, average length of stay, two and a half days. So a mixture of weekend courses, week-long courses, and then some a lot of day courses during the height of the season, July, August, and also running 6 month instructor training courses. The centre had just been recognised as a franchised arm of Pembrokeshire College, so we were offering career training in being a water sports instructor at that time, and the whole centre had been expanded quite considerably. We had big plans for that year. A lot of marketing had already been put in place and was just beginning to come out at the time the Sea Empress ran aground.
Wow, pretty cool place actually. So then let's take you back 20 years now and think about, just to sort of explain how you remember your specific memories about the Sea Empress, how you first learned about it, saw it, and then the consequent impacts on yourself and your business.
Yeah. First heard about it, I believe it was a Thursday night, maybe. I can't remember the exact day. I know it was late in the week. And somebody just told us in the pub that something had happened, a ship had gone aground. So we went up to the headland, near St. Anne's Head, to see. We saw all the lights, you could just smell, the air was absolutely thick with oil, you could hardly breathe. We probably shouldn't have been there in the first place, but then the next day we were actually operating. We had courses running at the time. We had people down, I think it was Hobie Cat tuition was running. We didn't see any oil in the water there, so we actually started. I think Annie, your senior instructor, just went out for a sail to check it out, and it seemed all right in the bay where we were. And the reason for that was because it was a strong northerly wind, and the oil was being kept out of the bay by the wind. So, she ran some Hobie Cat tuition, then came back in. We did have oil on the boat, so we decided not to do any more and start complaining to people about it. But that was only in the first 48 hours that the boat was aground. I had to go to a conference then, Royal Yachting Association conference workshop seminar in North Wales for the weekend. So Friday morning I set out for that, thinking, well, it'll probably be dealt with, they'll probably tow the boat in and deal with it, somehow. And then I was pretty well immersed in the conference over the weekend. Driving back down on Sunday, I stopped, I think it was in McCuntler's, to get some food on the way, stopped in a Chinese takeaway, looked up at the screen, It just looked a whole lot worse. Of course, there was all over the news, there were the shots of the Sea Empress, you know, oil spouting out of the ventilator shaft on deck, and you know, she was pretty well, her deck was down at sea level then. So I thought, no, this is really serious, you know. So I got back down and the others filled me in on what was happening, what had been happening while I'd been away, you know, not today, yeah. They couldn't do anything, obviously, but. That was it. We'd just thrown into complete turmoil because we were a mile and a half from where she actually went aground. At the time, we'd done a massive amount in promotion and publicity because we'd set up a sort of enlarged structure for the centre with our instructor training programmes in particular. 2 weeks previously, or no, 3 weeks maybe previously, we'd been at the London Boat Show. We had a big presence on 5 different stands at the London Boat Show. We had our own stand. There was a feature panel on us on the Hobie Cat stand with all our leaflets. We had a water sports centre called Bray Lake, who used to organise trips to us. They'd given us a column with display panels all around it on their stand to publicise our water sports weekends and weeks. We were on Pembrokeshire County Council stand. We had a windsurfer up above the stand with our logos on it and our leaflets all over the stand. Where else? Oh yeah, Welsh Development Agency also had a big stand there. That was tourism based. Tenby had a big. I think that was the year they had a big panorama of Tenby as a real. Almost as if you were really there with railings overlooking North Beach. I think that was the year, I'm not sure. But anyway, we were on that. So we had, you know, a big presence really at the London Boat Show. A couple of staff up there as well, just so we could talk to people on all these various stands. Came back, and then 3 weeks later that happened. You know. So, although we made a big impression, got a massive amount of inquiries from it. One of the key elements there was our instructor training program, because that was going to. I mean, up to that point, we'd been ticking over, and I think we're averaging about £26,000 a year profit. We were turning over a couple of hundred thousand. Then there was the cafe and the accommodation on top of that, so we were probably going £300,000-£400,000 worth, you know, potentially. And with the extra marketing that year, that would have gone up a lot, mainly because of our instructor training courses. I think we had capacity for 18 on that course that year. In fact, we ended up with 6 who actually booked and stayed and did the course. So we had 6 instead of 18, and they were probably the mainstay of our income for that year. Because we were closed until I think it was late June, whereas usually we'd have been quite busy from Easter onwards all the way through. And our instructor training programs in particular financially would have worked well, because we'd spend a couple of months training the guys up and giving them a lot of different instructor courses, a lot of which is transferable, so they would have been very well skilled, very well trained. And then done a couple of months work experience for us in this busiest time, and then done further training at the end of the summer, which would give them a very good CV and a very good package of skills, you know, to start their careers with. But it would also save us a certain amount of money, because our level of instructors, which we'd normally employ 18 to 20 instructors in July and August, that would have been reduced by probably. Hard to put by using trainees, but also being able to train those ourselves, so we knew exactly how well they were trained.
Was the Empress? In what ways did it prevent you from being able to run your business?
Right. Well, we finally got the go ahead from the Environmental Health Department in June. Up until then, they said you mustn't run courses. You can't run courses. Mm-hmm. We did have these half a dozen trainee instructors, and we were helped out by Pembrokeshire Water Sports, the council-operated water sports centre up in Pembroke, they actually helped us out with lending us some the use of some of their facilities in Fishguard. So we were taking people from our place up to Fishguard, which is a 30-mile trip, you know, to every, sort of, so that's 60 miles of travelling every day to and fro, to probably about 2 hours in Premiership, to run the courses. They, you know, helped out with some use of some equipment up there, some boats and kayaks and things. So we were able to keep the course running by going away from the part of Pembrokeshire coast that was affected. You know, we moved up further north to run our tuition, but that just meant we had to travel every day. As far as what happened then was, and all that was happening in May, throughout May and June, or from mid-April onwards, when we got to July, August, which would have been our really busy months, where we might get between 30 and 40 people a day doing courses with us, make sure, or up to 50 even doing day courses in about 6 different sports and several different levels of each sport taking place at the same time. We virtually had no bookings because we didn't get any ordinary bookings with people just coming down and booking weekends or 5-day courses with us, and a lot of people had cancelled their holidays in the area. The ones that did come down to the area were probably further north than us, right in the north of Pembrokeshire towards St David's, and were probably also not that beach orientated. There were probably people coming down for the castles and the scenery and the, you know, the coast, but not necessarily going in the water, which wasn't what we were all about, because we were all about 100% getting in the water. I think it was 80% of our income in the first year. The first season we were 80% down. We only got 20% of our income. The second season after that. Now, everybody said, all the consultants said at the time, that it's going to take you 5 years to recover from this. And in fact, it did. It got 5 years for the business to start breaking even again. The first year we lost around 80% of it. The second year was about 70%. The third year was about 60%. Fourth year was about 50% of our previous income. And then we were still, from previous levels, we were still down a lot. Business was half or less than half the size it was. But by that time, we trimmed all the costs, the running costs, so that it was then breaking even. But in the meantime, I'd lost that much income every year. The Oil Compensation Fund said, yeah, we will support you, because that's what we have to do, you know, is support you as a business which has suffered economic loss from it. But they wouldn't accept any effect after the first year, the first 12 months. Whereas everybody else said, it's going to take you 5 years to recover from this. So we got compensation for the first year. You know, although obviously it was delayed because we had to put the claims in, and they gave us little parcels of money to pay people's wages and all that. But what they said was, don't stop running any courses. You have to run exactly as you would have normally, so that we can see the effect. So you lay on all these courses, you know, you employ the instructors, you run it as normal. Well, from our point of view, that was simply money going out with nothing coming back in. You know, so they did cover that. But what they said, they never actually said when the cut-off point was. So we got compensated for the first year, but nothing further. And that took them to court, and had a solicitor working on my case along with other people as well. But they refused to accept any issues after the first year. So all those, extreme loss of income. And of course, we weren't able to spend as much on marketing, and people just didn't want to come because they'd seen, they'd seen everything all over the news. So they weren't going to go on holiday to a place that was only a mile and a half from where the tanker disaster had happened. So that's how it affected us. The long-term effects were that, in the end, I had to pull out of the business. You know, I didn't go bankrupt or anything, but I had to sell the house, to pay bills, you know, so I had to sell a 5-bedroom house on the waterfront in Dale, which probably worth quite a lot now. And in the end, I had to pass all the equipment in the centre over to the landlord. We did come to an agreement with the landlord, but it was dependent on him taking a management role of the business, you know, which he's normally very good at, but I don't think he's very good at marketing and promoting the business. And really, that kind of business is more a way of life than just all about money. It's about your customers. You're virtually living with them. You know, you're running the guest house where they stay. You're teaching them out on the water. You know, it's not a 9-to-5 job where you just close the door, lock up at the end of the day, and go home. You are living it. So after 5 years of that, went on for another couple of years. Can't remember what was the date. What year did it happen?
1996.
I'm trying to forget. 1996. So I went on, and I was still in. I mean, for 96 up to 2000, that was when it kind of, you could say, well, the business had recovered and was viable again, but it was probably a third of its previous size, and it was only making a very small profit. Very small. And the next few years then, say from 2000 onwards, were spent really, well, I pulled out of the business in 2007. I finally left it. So I did hang on and try and make something out of it, but there had been too much damage done in the first place, and I squared up with the landlord by handing all of the shop retail stock and the equipment over to him. So I virtually walked away, drew a line under it, you know, and said, right, this break-even point. So after having put all the work into it, I could have probably made a go of it, but I would have had to have been very, very motivated, and I would have had to been putting the 16 hours a day into it as I had been the previous, you know, the previous 10 years, 12 years to build it up to that level. But after the oil spill, I wasn't that motivated. Although, we did try a lot of quite good marketing to try and re-establish it, but we were playing catch-up, and it was literally just trying to get things back to where they were, and you know, we couldn't really sort of progress in a major way while that was still in people's consciousness.
So do you felt that the oil spill really impacted on Pembrokeshire's reputation as a sort of resort, or the quality of the water here?
Absolutely, yes, because that's a lot of what Pembrokeshire's about. People come to it for the coast, they come to go in the sea, you know, it's got that twin reputation really of being a very good family destination where you can go, you can come in, the water's clean, the kids can go in the water, they can play in the sand, lots of nice safe family beaches. But then you've also got the activities, you know, you've got extreme activities, you've got everything, co-steering, kayaking, surfing, windsurfing, kitesurfing. Yeah, I mean, from windsurfing terms, I'd got a lot of coverage in windsurfing magazines. We were recognised to be one of the top centres. We were the National Water Sports Centre in Plas Menai, I think, on the year before this happened. I think that they had 1,200 residents on their windsurfing courses. We had 1,130, so we were only, you know, although it was a kind of a smaller personally run centre, we weren't very far behind the National Water Sports Centre in terms of numbers. So. It still affected things. People were still asking 3, 4, 5 years later on the phone. You know, you get a phone inquiry from someone in London, and which is where a lot of our business came from, and they'd still be asking about the oil. I'd say, well, what's it like now? We lost a lot of people to Scotland, we lost a lot of people to Cornwall and Devon. And once people go and get used to being in a new place for a couple of years, if you miss something very quick that had literally had no effect after the first year, but it was, I think it had just become embedded in people's consciousness, and they would associate Pembrokeshire with West Wales with oil, you know, with the pictures they'd seen on the you know, on the news reports and documentaries at the time. So now people have forgotten. But we're 20 years down the line.
Mm. So it clearly had a really devastating effect on your business for years, actually. Did you, when you first became aware of how serious the oil spill was when you came back from the conference, did you have a sense of the long-term effects, or do you remember what your feelings were at the time?
I remember what they were. I couldn't think past that current season, so I was all I was doing was thinking ahead as to how are we going to get the business back up, how are we going to get people down to do things this season, and where can we get people doing things? You know, perhaps the locals want to get out on the water because they might know a little bit more about how the water is cleaning up now. So we looked at other kind of target markets, but that's all I could do was try and get the best out of the first season. You know, couldn't really plan anything ahead because it had literally fallen apart. We knew we didn't have income. Couldn't really, I mean, even lost contact really. It was Pembrokeshire College who we'd been doing stuff with. Although the basis of that was we went out and got the customers in the first place, and then we signed them up to the college courses, you know, the instructor training courses. So, yeah, it's being put into that situation, and I think, it's difficult to say how you'd act when somebody just pulls the rug out from under you. You know, you haven't got a lot of resources. You haven't got any resources.
Was it something that had ever crossed your mind might happen before it happened?
Sorry?
Was it something that had ever crossed your mind could have had the potential for happening before it had happened?
Not on that scale. I was aware of the fact that, you know, occasionally oil tankers had run aground previously around Milford Haven, but they'd been small ones, and they'd been on the rocks, and they'd been dealt with either quite quickly or I imagine safety and procedures to have been improved, to the point where obviously dealing with big ships and being modern. You know, I mean, there were no issues, like the radar wasn't working on the way into the, you know, to the haven, and the pilots weren't going out to get on board the boats further out. Well, they should have been. Insurance at the time, the business was, well, it wasn't insured for that sort of thing, for extreme business loss. Reason for that was there'd been an outdoor sports accident down in Dorset, and the premiums of all the activity centres, my premiums that year or perhaps the year before, had the quotes had gone from £3,000 or £4,000 a year to £17,000 a year, and I couldn't afford that, so I'd settled on just third-party liability, you know, so I hadn't insured against business loss, so I wasn't insured. But there was this oil compensation fund, which allegedly would cover it, but it didn't, you know, it probably covered a quarter of what I lost.
In terms of that fund, and also you mentioned that a group of you got together and took the fund or the funders to court over the matter, because it ended abruptly after a year. How was that organised? Who's the group of people and
the although my it was organised in various sectors according to what the businesses were. So I think the hotels and guest houses did one. There was no overall association. But there were, so like the fishermen had their joint claim or joint action, I think. I believe my solicitor, John Parsons, was chairman of the overall, you know, of the committee. They're obviously exchanging views, ideas, and on fighting the, you know, compensation claims on behalf of locals, of local businesses. So I don't know what it was called. But I think my case was an individual, and they had several large individual actions or claims, and then there were some joint ones, or whether or not it was just simply an association for information. So they're exchanging, you know, exchanging notes on their dealings with the compensation fund.
And obviously you spent a lot of time in the water yourself, I'm assuming, and it's been a lot, not just your business, but your passion as well, I guess, the sea and Pembrokeshire coastline. How did it change the way that you felt about Pembrokeshire or about the coastline here, about perhaps having the oil refinery here, or perhaps just about your relationship with sort of getting in the water yourself?
As far as getting in the water myself, didn't really change what I do. Literally, the parts of Pembrokeshire that were affected were the south part of the county, and I'm based right on the borderline. You know, the Wurzburg Centre, and where I live was in Dale. And we were going into the water fairly soon, within weeks anyway, 6 weeks or something after it had happened. Or we were travelling to other parts further north to go, and whether it was surfing, whether it was training, or whether it was just doing our own thing. But so it didn't have too much effect what I was personally doing. It did affect the business, obviously, and practically. As far as relationship with the oil industry, that's always been a bit of a, I mean, we know it's here, we know we can't get rid of it, and we just have to work with it and work in it. In the past, I've worked on the refineries, and I've gone back to working on the refineries in the last years, you know, or close to them, at least it will, on from the water. I mean, I'm now involved in health and safety, health and safety consultancy, driving safety boats, and doing risk assessments for a lot of the work that's happening on the marine side of the refineries, you know, on the construction of jetties, that sort of thing, maintenance projects. You know, the refinery's always been there. You could say a necessary evil, but they do employ a lot of people in Pembrokeshire. They are here, and when you look at some of the larger installations like LNG gas terminals now, if government wants them to be here, they will be here. It doesn't matter what local people think or say or organise. So the local people, you know, have, in theory, have a voice at consultations. In much the same way as environmental groups have voices or are taken into consideration, it's only lip service. It's just ticking a box. Or, you know, the oil and gas industry very often doesn't have any true feelings about the environment. I'll say that in the past, because I've seen some of the criteria they're supposed to work to ignored on a daily basis. But when you get an inspector coming along, or, you know, because obviously to go on site people have to say what their credentials are, and then things on that day are run smoothly and nicely and according to the book. No great revelations there. It's normal in the industry or whatever, you know. Money's the bottom line. Money and big business. I'm part of it, you know. I get paid. I get my money to, you know, money to live on. Large proportion of that comes from oil, you know, working for oil companies or gas companies. And, so, you know, it's the world we live in. It's the world we live in.
Yeah.
There's no easy, quick solution. You can't run things 100% safely. You can't run things 100% environmentally compatible. It's just, accidents will happen as well.
Yeah.
Accidents will happen. You know, lots of procedures and things have now been improved and are in place now. They are in place. They are working. They are working much better. But you still get mechanical failures. You still get failures in technology and in systems, you know, in guiding systems. So things can still go wrong with boats' engines or steering, or you know. But they've got the safeguards now. Now saying that you know they only accept double skinned tankers, double hull tankers, that sort of thing. All those safeguards are, will help. But when you look anywhere, you look around the world or you look around Britain, petrol storage depots explode, but chemical plants explode like Flixborough, and although hopefully it's improving all the time. And that's it, I suppose.
So I think perhaps just now it's maybe how I think almost covered it in that last bit there, but how you reflect on the Siempre Sorsable 20 years on.
How I reflect on it. On a personal level, it probably gave me about 15 years of massive, what would you call it? Stress. Stress. Being called by maybe 20 to 30 people a day who you owe money to and saying, I can't pay you, but I've got a claim in with this oil compensation thing, and they might be giving me some money in 2 months' time, so having to live like that. And a lot of people are very understanding like that, like business suppliers. Probably ruined my relationship with my partner. I lost my house. And if it hadn't happened, I would have probably been in the same situation as a lot of my peers who were starting outdoor centres at that time and have done very well. And now got quite large businesses, quite nice houses, all sorted. Whereas for me, I'm reluctant to get involved in anything that involves employing other people, scale of it. I'm always aware that it all might go wrong and fall to bits. So whereas before I might have gone for it and said, right, let's make a go of it. Now I will do that, but I'll do it on a personal level, on a small scale. I just work for myself. If I want anything done, I'll hire someone in to do it for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, I'll get contractors in to do it. Rather than trying to set up a firm and established business, which is what I was, had done. It was there. I got very nice letters of reference from other people from around Britain who said at the time what the status of the business was. So for me, it did that to me. It made me very reluctant to get involved in things, especially business wise. Having said that, I've drawn a line under it now. The last 10 years have been quite a lot better since I've been on my own and not involved with that business. Yeah.
And are you still involved in water sports?
I still have it, but it's really like for 2 or 3 months in the summer, June and especially July and August, I'm teaching surfing. I'm teaching surfing every day, and that's good. And that sort of provides me with a fair amount of income. Normally for about 8 months of the rest of the year then, I'm working with the oil and gas. I have been working with the oil and gas industry on the Haven, involved in water safety. But that's run down to almost nothing now, because with the current economic climate, they're not continuing with their larger maintenance projects. I know it's affected some other companies. You've got people like Mainport who just gone into administration this week, who were employing about 200 people, that they were one of the main local companies. I work for them. So so the effect is, I would have probably had a very nice business, nice house and everything, and I don't now. having said that, as I say, and I've now moved away from the oil and gas side of it to a certain extent, starting with photography now full time, whereas it's always been professional but part time. But now I'm moving into photography full time, and that's a good challenge, and it's really nice. I'm loving it. So where I am now, I'm very comfortable with. But a lot of the important things in life, over a quite a long period of my life, were wrecked. It wasn't a very good time. But
sounds like a really challenging time. Do you feel that there were some other peers maybe that are working in similar industry or different industries perhaps you're aware of that have experienced similar longer term effects with the Empress Oil Spill than
from the Sea Empress? I don't think so, because they were in Pembrokeshire. The other centres were far enough away not to be affected in a big way. There weren't many happening in the south part of the county at the time, because it was before the outdoor activities sector really boomed and really became established. So there weren't many big centres. I mean, now you can go. You've got several surf schools operate at Freshwater West. You've got a lot of water sports going on at Lidstep. You've got a lot going on at Tenby, but those operations weren't really there at that time. They've all developed since. And the other ones in the north of the county, St David's, which wasn't really affected by the oil, it was too far north, and ran to Fishguard as well. And I think the Pembrokeshire Water Sports, I'm not sure how much they did at the time, but that's a council-run centre. It was, it's closed now anyway. But they were far enough up the Haven. I think they were probably still running activities on the Haven, but higher up. I'm not sure. But they had the other centre at Fishguard anyway that they could use. So they had another facility, to use. And as I say, on a business level, but also on a personal level, I don't think a lot of the people who work for me managed to find work with other companies. So all that happened was they moved away from. What we were doing. There were two or three regular, my senior instructors, who had become full-time at that time, Sea Empress. They gradually moved off into other areas. One of them remained as my manager over the years, and then she eventually left, probably 8 years, 10 years later. Around about the time that I did. But not too many. Apart from that, a lot of instructors at the centre were seasonal. So they would come down. They'd probably work for 2 or 3 years with us and keep coming back, whether they were students or whether they were people who might do 2 or 3 years with us and then move to a water sports company abroad, like Mark Warner. A lot of these companies we did training for, we trained the instructors. So we were in contact with those, and some of the guys would work at my place for 2 years, 3 years, and then go off and work abroad. So they just kind of, you know, when we finally after the first season realised there was the business wasn't going to improve, it just meant then that I employed less people ongoing, you know. So by two or three years after, we were only down to a third of the number of instructors I'd normally employ. Yeah. So locally, not too much, and I suppose the physical side of it, the practical side of the oil spill, the effects weren't as much in Dale. The main effect was in my head, which was the financial, obviously the financial ones, and the future of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, once the oil spill is superficially, in a way, being cleared up, and everything looks like it's back to normal.
From their point of view, back to normal.
Yeah, but for so many people, perhaps it wasn't the case, and it took a lot longer to recover, really, or perhaps never really be able to get to the point that they were before.
Yeah. See, for me, it was 2007, but that's when I actually, I think 2006 probably, so it was 10 years later that I was clear as a business, you know, that I'd left. So those 10 years really were, you know, quite a lot happened. Sort of in my own life, whereas a lot of people who are there and working and doing other jobs or just were not that much affected after the first season, you know, once we got, because we were, even in that first season, it was great, the guys on the long-term instructor training course, the 6 month course, you know, our six trainees, I still hear back from them that they said that was the best time they've had in their life, you know, sort of for the working, the training they got, and, you know, the teaching practice they were doing. So later in that season, there was, you know, as far as they were concerned, it was great. You know. Yeah.
And did you feel, throughout that time, that really challenging time, did you always think back to this, the Empress? Is it always was it quite sort of apparent to you that it was always all of the problems that followed were because of that?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I knew exactly where I was and what had caused the situation, because I'd got a very good vision of where I wanted to go previous to that, and you know, it puts you on your back foot, and I'd started out, the first season, I started out with a mindset of getting it back to where it was. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, it was still nowhere near it. You know, it was obvious it wasn't going to get, it was just not going to get back to where it was. But, I suppose I'm quite optimistic anyway. And that's what kept me going. But I had a lot of people say, on the business side, a couple of quite people whose opinions I respect a lot, and they did say to me, "Well, we absolutely have no idea how you're keeping going through all this, because we were given up years ago." You know. So. But there you go, I was somewhere, I was doing something I believed in a place I believed in, and I couldn't see anything else, you know, I couldn't see a way out. A lot of people would have just, as soon as it all starts going that wrong, would have just binned it, and I should have just got out, you know, I should have just closed it, because then I wouldn't have been incurred future years of losses, you know, and I should have probably based my, I should have sold off all the equipment, paid off the mortgage on the house, because that would have done almost all that, and I'd have kept the house. But when you're in that situation, you know, it's a decision that you don't really see all the options. You know, we had some good business advice from some local sort of people who drafted in to help, you know. But the bottom line was that the compensation fund, once it got into the court, I think it was still, 3 years later, they were saying, well, we might still be able to push the claim, but it depends on the results of a legal action that's taking place in the Italian courts, you know, and it's probably going to be 8 to 10 years before that actually comes to court for a decision, you know. So you always had this thing, well, you know, something might happen, we might get this judgment, which will establish a precedent, you know, but in the end, just didn't, you know, so time, just draw a line under it in time, you know, and carry on. But it was a lot of, I suppose I couldn't really see anywhere else to go, you know. Well, in fact, my option, I would have had a lot of options, you know. I could have closed everything and perhaps concentrated on my photography, you know, at that stage. But there you go, but I'm there now.
Yeah.
So that's what I can do. I can do that from now on.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing,
yeah,
as well.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add? I think we haven't covered about your memories of it at the time, perhaps, or...
My physical memories of it, see, are not that bad, because we were on the edge of it. In fact, it was amazing how all this was going on, and it wasn't affecting where we were. The place wasn't covered in oil at all.
Right.
But it was just weirdly quiet. The phone stopped ringing, whereas normally the phone would go 15, 20 times a day through February, March, April. The phone would be running, would be going 15, 20 times a day for inquiries. You know, if I came in and saw the inquiry book with 3 or 4 inquiries, phone inquiries, you know, about courses from London, Birmingham, Bristol, wherever. If I saw 3 or 4 inquiries, I'd think there's something seriously wrong here. You know, there's normally 15, 20 inquiries. But we didn't get a single. The phone just did not ring. You know, for a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, the phone didn't ring. But we were there. The water was clean. You know, it was sunny. There was nice weather. Our trainees started. We were actually teaching and training them every day. But there was nobody else. Nobody else wanted to come down and go in the water. You know. That was really weird.
Yeah, it must have been really unnerving, yeah. Really worrying and wondering when it was going to change.
And then we got the okay from the Environmental Health Department and Council in June. That was, yeah, fine, you're okay, the water quality is up, we've got, you know, you're okay to go. And still nothing happened, you know, just absolutely quiet. Yeah, that was very strange. Did that answer your last question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it did. Thank you very much. That was really brilliant.